So today we'll pick up the following lines. What is this wonder? Alertly seeing through confusion is the way of silent illumination and the origin of subtle radiance. Vision penetrating into radiance is weaving gold on a jade loom. Subject and object influence each other. Light and darkness are mutually dependent. There is neither mind nor world to rely on, yet the two mutually interact. What is this wonder? On the third day of our 8-day session, what is the wonder? When the bell sounds before the break of day and your cold winter bones begin to wake, what is the wonder? When the clappers snap to start a sitting period, what? When the lone owl calls from the building mist and fog, what wonder? And when your next breath arises, from where? And that breath falls away, to where? What is this wonder? The line before, what is this wonder, is, in this brightness, all striving is forgotten. When our striving is forgotten, when effort and desire are forgotten, when want and need fall away, when you completely forget yourself, you begin to touch and experience the mind with no walls that is always present. This mind is vast and circular and has no boundaries, and it's filled with light. This light is not an opposite to dark. It stands as itself, by itself. It contains and infuses all things, as Day Shan discovered when Lung Tong blew out the candle. Hakuin said the billion worlds of the universe are bubbles in the ocean. From the perspective of one's own light, they are not so much as a firefly's glow. This is because the billions of worlds are fixed in time and space. And the great light, though including space and time, is not defined by or located in them. This light is beginningless and endless. It is before. It is before time and space, before being and non-being. It is before thought, word, and feeling. And it is before you and you and you and me. It is always right before your eyes and looking out of your sockets. Once Yun Men gave instruction saying, everyone has her own light. If you want to see it, you can't. The darkness is dark, dark. Now at this very moment, right now, we find ourselves and our practice to be the way. The way no longer resides inside or outside ourselves, but is present in each thing that we see, touch, or feel, in each thing that we do. Hung Shui, in his practice instruction, says, the field of boundless emptiness is what exists from the very beginning. You must purify, cure, grind down, or brush away all the tendencies you have fabricated into apparent habits. Then you can reside in the clear circle of brightness. Utter emptiness has no image. Upright independence does not rely on anything. just expand and illuminate the original truth, unconcerned by external conditions. Accordingly, we are told to realize that not a single thing exists. In this field, birth and death do not appear. The deep source, transparent down to the bottom, can radiantly shine and can respond unencumbered to each speck of dust without becoming its partner. The subtlety of seeing and hearing transcends mere colors and sounds. The whole affair functions without leaving traces and mirrors without obscurations. Very naturally, mind and dharmas emerge and harmonize. So this is a lovely instruction. I'm particularly drawn to, you must purify, cure, grind down, or brush away all the tendencies you have fabricated into apparent habits. We do not turn away from what seems to arise. We simply face each thing, and within that wall facing, each of us has our particular way of working with what arises. Some naturally purify, which means just returning to mu, to sounds, to breath. Some naturally grind down, which means mu faces the thing that arises. There isn't a returning. Each thing is experienced as mu. Some brush away, which means with open hands, like dust on a mirror, we simply wipe mu across the surface of mind. And some cure, which is bringing up the wonder of mu, the wonder of sounds and breath to face what is apparently arising. Most of us tend towards one of these methods, but also most in different circumstances innately use the one that seems most natural. Depending on the circumstances, sometimes we grind, at other times cure. Sometimes we brush away, and at other times we purify. But what is key here is to know that our tendencies, which are simply human, are only tendencies, and our habits such only because we identify them as habits. In other words, by calling them habits, we concretize them. We give them an undeserving primacy, a legitimacy that removes them from their free-floating aspect. Allow the habits to be what they are, simply tendencies, your tendency, and hold them lightly, and hold yourself lightly. The text next says, alertly seeing through confusion is the way of silent illumination and the origin of subtle radiance. Vision penetrating into radiance is weaving gold on a jade loom. Vision penetrating into radiance is seeing through the one who sees. When seen through, the notions of I see or no one sees, of everything sees or nothing sees fall away. And there is simply golden threads weaving, gold threads woven on a jade loom. It was said in the old days that the devas wore clothing woven with golden threads from a jade loom. In Sanskrit and Pali, deva literally means radiant one or shining one. So this illusion, gold thread on a jade loom, is to evoke a sense of harmony and of equanimity. Vision penetrating into radiance is weaving gold on a jade loom. The very fact of seeing into and through the apparent habits and perceived tension of opposites, of being and non-being, of realization and delusion, of samsara and nirvana, allows those constructs to fall away. And when we see through, there is simply the morning's almost frozen dew dripping down the inverted copper bells. And when we see through, there is only a raven flying through the snow at night. And when we see through, there is just a gray heron stalking the mist and fog of dawn. And although there is a subtle allusion to harmony and equanimity embedded in this line, our task, our gateway to ease and joy, is not in creating harmony, but in dropping more fully into who and what we are from the very beginning, from before your parents were born. And we do this sometimes with laughter, and sometimes with sobs. We do this sometimes by rubbing our aching knees and back, and sometimes by stretching. We do this sometimes with words of love, and at others with words of admonishment. To signal out any one way of being as better or worse is to miss the point of weaving on a jade loom. Satsujo had been a student of Hakuin's for a long time. And the following is from the Kahawai Koans, which is a collection of koan compiled by a group of female students of Eiken Roshi in the Diamond Sangha in the 1970s and early 1980s, focused on the teaching and waking up stories of Zen women from the past. Satsujo had been a student of Hakuin's for a long time. When she was old, her granddaughter died, and Satsujo was distraught with grief. An old man from the neighborhood, most likely a priest, told her off. "Why are you wailing so much and carrying on like this? If people hear you, they'll ask why this old lady who was once a student of Hakuin's and is supposedly enlightened is mourning her granddaughter so much and so loudly." Satsujo glared at the old priest and scolded him, saying, "You bald-headed fool, what do you know? My tears and weeping are better for my child than your incense, flowers, and lamps." This is vision penetrating into radiance. This is weaving gold on a jade loom. This is accepting life and living life as we find it, not adding anything, but not leaving anything out. The next lines in the imprint say, "Subject and object influence each other. Light and darkness are mutually dependent. There is neither mind nor world to rely on, yet them two mutually interact." Before we even come to practice, we are aware of the truth of the first two lines, "Subject and object influence each other. Light and darkness are mutually dependent." But at some point in practice, these apparent relationships dissipate. And the best we can say is that subject is subject and object is object. As Hong Shui says, at some point in practice, we stay with that just as that, with this just as this. Each thing is known as unique and glistens in its own Dharma position. Its past and future is cut off, and each is known as itself, alone. But as we see through the one who sees, again a slight and subtle shift occurs, and we see and know things as they originally, as they naturally are, interdependent, mutually supporting, connected and intimate in a way that our ordinary before practice vision could never imagine or comprehend. We start to know each thing as closer than our own breath, more connected to us than our own hips are. And now, without any work or pre-configuring, the palace moss without design contains the moon. We each are embedded or infused with the great light of the cold winter's moon. And in that light, we know each other as sons and daughters of the Buddha, whether living or dead, sentient or insentient, born or yet to be born, near or far away. And in this connectedness, in this intimacy, we realize because there are no walls, there isn't anything outside guiding us, holding us, or leading us forward. In fact, there isn't anything to depend on or to rely on other than being here, now, together. So I'd like to conclude this talk with a full text of Yunmen's instruction, which I brought up earlier. This is case 86 from the Blue Cliff Record. Yunmen gave instruction saying, "Everyone has her own light. If you want to see it, you can't. The darkness is dark, dark. Now at this very moment, what is your light?" He himself answered, "The storeroom, the gate." Again he said, "It would be better to have nothing than to have something good. There is nothing to rely on other than being here, now, together. There is nothing to rely on other than being here together with the storeroom and gate, being here together with the stars and the moon, being here together with the mountains and valleys, not as something outside yourself, but as your very own self."